Welcome to the Beacon Broadcast from Beacon Baptist Church in Burlington, North Carolina, featuring expositional Bible teaching by Pastor Greg Barkman. If you'd like to correspond with the Beacon Broadcast, or if you wish to support this radio ministry, write to the Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201, or find us on the web at beaconbaptist.com. BeaconBaptist.com. The Beacon Broadcast is supported in part by the gifts of faithful listeners. Now, with today's message from God's Word, here is Greg Barkman.
As many of you know, we have gotten into the second indictment, which involves treachery, found in Malachi chapter 2. Which is one of a number of indictments, but only two of them are specifically called treachery. They involve an act of treason, an act of betrayal against the whole nation. And the first one is marrying pagan wives, strictly forbidden by the law of God, and it was for the protection of the people of God, because marrying pagan wives was a way to introduce pagan idolatry into the whole nation. Wives bring their idols with them into the home. Wives become mothers, and their children observe them worshiping idols in the home. Wives become friends of the neighboring wives around them, and so neighboring wives soon become acquainted with their worshiping idols in their home. And before long, idolatry is spreading throughout the nation. And therefore, the act of marrying pagan wives is an act of disobedience against God, yes, a serious sin, yes, but it is more than that. It is treachery. It is treason. But as we have learned, there is a second sin, which is also called treason, and that one comes a whole lot closer to where we live today. We don't have many idol worshipers in our community, but we sure have an awful lot of divorce. And that's what the second issue is all about. And we'll continue studying it on the Beacon Broadcast on this Friday, November 22. Thank you for joining me. And thank you for supporting this broadcast so that we can teach God's Word on a daily basis on this station. Verse 13 says, "And this is the second thing you do." That is the second indictment that involves treachery. "You cover the altar of the Lord with your tears, with weeping and crying, so he does not regard the offering anymore, nor receive it with goodwill from your hand. Yet you say, 'For what reason?' Because the Lord has been witness between you and the wife of your youth, with whom you have dealt treacherously, yet she is your companion and your wife by covenant." And it goes on, "Did he not make them one?" And so forth. So what do we have here? Well, we have an act of betrayal which impedes the ability to worship God. That's the reference in verse 13 to the tears on the altar and God not accepting an offering at your hand. And then he goes on in verse 14 to spell out exactly what this is. It is an act of divorce, an act of putting away their Jewish wives. And these wives are described in three terms. I'll give you what I have called them, and then we'll go back and look at the exact wording in the text. But these are, number one, loyal wives, number two, faithful wives, and number three, committed wives. She is, first of all, a loyal wife. She is the wife of your youth. She has been by your side for a long time. From the days of your youth, most men and women married relatively young in Bible days, younger than we customarily do today. And so he's talking about putting away their Jewish wives that they married when the wives were probably teenagers and the men were probably not much older than 18 or 20. And so they've been together for a while. And now they want to put them away. the wife of your youth, a loyal wife. Secondly, these wives are described as faithful wives because they are also described with the word companion. The Lord has been witness between you and the wife of your youth with whom you have dealt treacherously, yet she is your companion. Companion, it's a feminine form of a Hebrew word for partner. She is your partner. We use that terminology, don't we, when we talk about marriage partners. That's exactly what's in view here. It is actually, in the Hebrew language, a construction term. It speaks of a seam or a joint, and it is used of a close friend with whom interests are shared. She is your companion. She is your partner. We often hear it said in our day that a person, when they get married, when people marry, they should marry their best friend. Or, I don't know how many times we hear it put exactly that way, but we often hear it said, my husband, my wife, is my best friend. They have become my best friend. Well, that's exactly the way it ought to be. And that's what is indicated by this word companion. She is your companion. She is your partner. She is a close friend who has shared your interests for many years, but you are now putting her away. Now, many times the problem in marriages is that this is what is supposed to develop, a close friendship between marriage partners, but oftentimes there is a fail to develop marital unity because you have to work at it. It doesn't come automatically. Now, it does improve gradually over time simply by sharing interest and doing things together. So maybe in that sense it does come automatically, but there has to be an intentionality about it. There has to be a desire to make your marriage partner your best friend. And that really is what that person should become. It's pretty hard to say, I will marry my best friend, because sometimes that's possible and sometimes it's not. Sometimes we hear people today talking about marrying their high school sweetheart or something like that. And in that case, it's probably true that they are marrying their best friend, or at least one of their best friends. But it takes a heap of living together to actually become your best friend. Oftentimes, when young people grow up, they have best friends that are of the same sex. Girls, I think, have a stronger tendency toward that than boys, but most girls have a few friends, usually a small number of girlfriends that are their best friends. And they grew up together. They shared so many things together. They went to the same school. They played sports together. They maybe played in the band together. They possibly went to the same church. They went shopping together. They shared secrets with one another. And over time, over years, they became best friends. And usually those are the people who are the attendants at your wedding. Now, and you can't instantly make your partner your best friend in that same sense, because the only way for that to develop is by sharing interests over a period of time. But that's what you're supposed to do when you get married. And I know I'm straying a little bit from the text and going into some marriage counseling now, but I think it's needed in our day. In the day in which we live, in which there is such an assault upon marriage, in which so many marriages fail, one of the reasons is because there is this failure to develop marital unity. Now, I don't want to try to get into too many details here. I'm certainly not suggesting that marriage partners should do everything, absolutely everything together, and have no friends outside the marriage and no interest outside of those that they can share with one another. I don't happen to believe that. I really don't. I think that can become almost claustrophobic or something. It can become not very, very strange and unnatural. Strained, to be sure. No, that's not necessarily healthy. But on the other hand, too many marriages after a while, each partner pretty much goes their own way, carves out their own life, has their own circle of friends, their own interests that they don't share in any way, shape, or form. And pretty soon, what you've got is two people living in the same house, living under the same roof, legally married, but growing farther and farther apart because they are not sharing interests. They are not a seam, a joint, going back to the Hebrew word here. They are not developing a close friendship with one with whom interests are shared. That's what you need to do. And if you don't do that, eventually you're going to have real problems. You're going to draw apart. It's really sad when how many times when children grow up and leave the home, husbands and wives sometimes in that situation realize they don't have much in common. They have become strangers. Their only commonality up until that point was their shared interest in their children. And when the last child leaves the nest, they look at each other and realize that that's a virtual stranger that's staring at them across the breakfast table, and they don't have any shared interest. What a shame. Don't let that happen. Having an empty nest is certainly a sad thing in some ways. It's just part of life. Life goes through cycles. You start out, you have no children. So at that point, you don't have to have children in order to be fulfilled, do you? You don't start out with children. And most couples, when they're newly married and young, without children, they enjoy that time together. They enjoy that romantic time, that partnership time, that dating time, like almost like they are dating each other all of the time. And then many times the children come along and the interests diverge, they go different ways, but the children remain the glue that holds the marriage together because they love their children, both of them do, and they're interested in the children, and they're watching the children, and they're proud of the children, and they're doing everything they can to help the children. And then that last child leaves the nest and they realize we don't have many shared interests, if any. The last one just went out the door. Well, if that's happened, and it shouldn't have, you should have been maintaining and developing close friendships all along that do not depend upon your children. It's wonderful to have children and to pour your lives into them, but that the marriage relationship is a more important relationship than the parent-child relationship. The marriage relationship is the closest relationship, and that needs to be recognized and developed. It needs to be acknowledged and acted upon. And if for some reason you didn't do that, well, it's not too late, but you need to roll up your sleeves and get to work. All right, the children are gone. The nest is empty. Good, that's an opportunity. Now we can do things together. We're not hindered by having children, that we can't travel, we can't involve ourselves in joint activities together because our responsibilities to our children were always interfering. It's sad in one way that they're gone, but maybe this is a golden opportunity to repair some weak spots in our marriage and make it this friendship that it was meant to be from the very beginning. Until next week, Greg Barkman saying good day. May God give you his eternal peace.